Well, thank you, everyone, for sticking around. I would like to acknowledge my co-authors on this paper, Glenn Martin, like myself, at North Dakota State University's Dickinson Research Extension Center in the southwestern part of the state, along with Rich Horsley and Martin Hochhalter in the Department of Plant Sciences on the main campus in Fargo. Scenes like this are more and more common across the northern Great Plains, where you see seeding being done directly into an undisturbed seedbed. And there's no question about it, in western North Dakota anyway, no-till is replacing clean-till systems. The reason is pretty straightforward. Oh, I can't get the arrow. Okay. If you look at crop performance in general, it tends to improve as tillage is reduced. For example, in a continuous wheat system, in a study that was published in Crop Management, this study was done at Dickinson, and you look at the bar combinations, the bars representing the no-till yield in each of 5 years. The white bar is on the right, and as you go left, then it's reduced till, and the blue bar is clean till. No-till yields consistently were greater than clean-till yields. No-till yields also were consistently greater than reduced-till yields. Interestingly, at least in some years, we were unable to detect differences, however, between reduced-till yields and clean-till yields. Similarly, looking at wheat following pea in a different system, again, no-till yields consistently were greater than clean-till yields and consistently greater than reduced-till yields. And again, not always able to see any yield advantage when looking at reduced till versus clean till, however. Overall, we saw about a 40% increase in yield simply due to the elimination of tillage. And this does explain why there is a move to no-till. I think it's also important to recognize that with these data anyway, it suggests that the benefits that accrue from reductions in tillage really are only consistent if you eliminate tillage entirely from the system. Why is this the case? Well, not only in this session it's been alluded to, but in some other sessions I've sat in on, I think these data that were collected across tillage studies throughout much of the Great Plains, including the Northern Great Plains, tell the story. As tillage was eliminated from as many as 10 operations to as few as zero, soil water conservation and in the Great Plains, that translates into a yield increase across these studies of from 16 to 40 bushels per acre. Now, this soil water conservation not only translates into enhanced performance of the crops, but it also translates into cropping system intensity. Historically, in the Great Plains, the crop fallow system ruled throughout really the 20th century, where if you're not from that region, the fallow, especially as you move north where spring wheat is grown, was an 18 or 19 month period. So a spring wheat crop was grown for 3 months, and that was followed by about an 18 or 19 month fallow period. As growers have moved to no-till, they found that they can eliminate that fallow period, or at least do it much less often, and they're growing annual crops each year. Well, I think that begs the question, should our variety recommendations reflect the changes in tillage and cropping system intensity that are occurring? Barley is an important crop in the northern Great Plains. It's an important crop in North Dakota. That red bar represents barley production in North Dakota, with the exception of 2011, with 2012 being the last year. Over the past 20 years, North Dakota has led the country in barley production. So again, the move to no-till and cropping system intensity, I think, really begs the question, should variety recommendations reflect those changes? With that in mind, a four-year study was conducted at Dickinson where we grew six barley varieties, three two-row types, Conlon, Conrad, and Pinnacle, and three six-row types, Lacey, Stellar, and D, and Tradition. Those six varieties, and this was all done under no-till, those six varieties were seeded following four previous crops, canola, hardhead, spring wheat, field pea, and corn crops commonly grown by area producers. The treatments were arranged in a randomized complete block as a split plot, where previous crop treatments comprised whole plots and barley varieties comprised subplots. Treatment combinations were replicated three times in each year. Subplot dimensions were 6 by 27 feet. Data that were collected include previous crop cover at barley planting, barley plant density determined at about 15 to 21 days after seeding, spike density at Zadox growth stage 85, plant height, and grain yield and quality data, and those quality data included grain protein content, test weight, grain test weight, and plump kernels. In terms of growing season precipitation, Bob and others, you would probably be pretty envious of what we have to work with in western North Dakota. We think we're dry, but it's all relative. But looking at growing season precipitation patterns over the 4 years, going from left to right on the right set of bars, the total precipitation for the growing season, 2010, the leftmost bar, growing season precipitation was near the 30-year average. That's the rightmost bar. Looking at the red bar, moving from left to right, the red bar represents 2011 precipitation, greater than the 30-year average. The green bar, 2012 precipitation, less than the 30-year average, and 2013, greater than 30-year average. So a pretty good mix of years where we had low, average, and above average amounts of precipitation. Well, what did we find? And I will say right off the bat that in general we did not see the previous crop typically impacting barley parameters that we collected. Looking at previous crop residue, now I should say with previous crop residue, we only collected this set of data during the last 3 years of the study. We did see a significant difference across the four previous crops in the amount of surface residue at barley planting, where as you move again from, and this is 2011, from right to left, greatest amounts of crop residue following wheat as expected. Then the red bar, that's in corn plots. The blue bar all the way to the left, that is canola plots, and least amounts of residue in plots where the previous crop was field pea, and we expected that. No difference in 2012 and in 2013 were detected. Now let's take a look at previous crop impacts on some selected barley traits. And again, remember, in general, we didn't see any difference. Previous crop really didn't impact barley performance, but it did in a couple instances. This is barley plant density. In both 2010 and 2013, we were unable to detect any impact of previous crop on barley plant density, but we were able to detect a difference in 2011 and 2012, where barley density was lowest following a corn previous crop. That's the red bar. Okay, there were differences in barley plant density when we looked at and compared that density across the other three previous crop treatments, but there wasn't a consistent trend across those other three treatments when we look at 2011 and then at 2012. Okay, now looking at the impact of previous crop on barley performance in terms of yield, we were able to detect difference, but only in one of 4 years. In 2010, as expected, barley yield was highest or greatest following a field pea crop. Then, following canola, no significant difference between canola and wheat. That's the bar on the right. And again, lowest yield for barley when it followed a corn crop. That's the red bar. Unable to detect any difference in barley performance for yield in the other 3 years of the study. Never detected a difference in terms of barley quality parameters that were considered based on previous crop. Similarly, when we looked at the interaction between previous crop and barley variety selection, generally an interaction was not detected. This was all at the P less than 0.05 level. There were a few exceptions, but generally that was the case. In contrast, barley variety selection almost always impacted barley performance for any trait that was considered. And I'm just going to talk again about just a few of them here. Looking at barley variety selection on plant density, significant differences were detected across the variety treatments in each of the 4 years. But I think it's important to note that in each of those 4 years, The barley variety tradition, represented by the orange bar to the right of the set, always was equal or greater than the other varieties in terms of plant density. Conversely, if you look at the bar on the left side of every set, the blue bar, that's the variety Conlon, and plant density for the variety Conlon was equal or less than that of the other varieties included in this study. And it's important to point out that in terms of seeding rate, an identical seeding rate was used for all those varieties. So this is a variety, a trait, at least in our study. That seeding rate that we used in North Dakota is 23 live kernels per square foot. Looking at variety selection on barley performance in terms of yield, again, a significant difference was detected in each of the 4 years. However, there always tended to be a loser, and there tended to be a winner regardless of year. Again, the variety Conlon, represented by the bar on the left in each of those years, always was basically the dog. It produced the low yield. The barley variety Lacey, represented by the green bar in each of the 4 years, produced a yield that was at least equal, if not greater, than the other varieties included in the study. Now, in the year 2011, this was one of only two instances where we actually were able to detect an interaction between previous crop treatment and variety selection. It did occur in 2011, and you can see a lot of jockeying among the heights of the bar. However, again, recall that Lacey is the green bar, and statistically speaking, regardless of previous crop, even with that significant interaction, the yield of Lacey was always equal or greater than that of the other barley varieties. So the bottom line was previous crop really didn't affect an adapted variety in terms of yield. The only other instance where an interaction occurred was for spike density in 1 year, and as was the case with yield, there was one variety that tended to produce spike density equal or greater than all the other varieties. So in summary, I guess this is what you call negative results, but it's good for our barley breeder, Rich Horsley. Barley performance generally was unaffected by previous crop. And really more importantly, and really what we were after in this study, barley cultivar rank was almost never affected by previous crop. And in the few cases that it was, the adapted variety never was underperforming relative to other varieties. So there really is no evidence with the cropping system intensity that's occurring as we move to no-till that at least our barley breeder needs to adjust his recommendations. He can move from a clean-till system to a no-till system. The yields may be different as we move to no-till, but the relative rank of the varieties remains the same. That's it.